This is Sound and Vision from KEXP. A new documentary about Little Richard, titled Little Richard, I Am Everything, was recently released to rave reviews.
He created the rock and roll icon.
Sorry, y'all. It wasn't Elvis.
And I am the king of rock and roll!
One of those reviews came in the form of an essay for The New Yorker. It was written by Hanif Abdurraqib. The essay is called What Little Richard Deserved. KEXP's Martin Douglas recently spoke to Hanif about the film and Little Richard's life.
I Am Everything contains a lot of intersecting themes: blackness, queerness, being denied credit for your contributions to culture, the way all art exists in a continuum. I was wondering if there was a particular theme that stood out to you while you were writing your New Yorker essay on the film.
Well, I think the really tender and thoughtful and critical examination of Little Richard's queerness and the contradictions therein, that felt unique to me. I mean, you know, Little Richard is someone who had his career explored and mined in many ways, but it does feel like there has not been a tender and thoughtful analysis of his queerness and the contradictions he carried along with his queerness. And this film, I think, did a really great job of that by how generously it rendered his history, his family history and his faith, his history around faith. That kind of offered up a pathway to understand how Little Richard kind of, in some ways, you know, grieved parts of his identity.
Little Richard was pronouncing his queerness.
He didn't want to burn in hell. That's the way we were taught.
He was very, very good at liberating other people. He was not good at liberating himself.
One of the big takeaways from this film and the art of Little Richard is the idea that he was very belatedly credited for helping create rock and roll and not nearly compensated accordingly.
Did you know that Elvis Presley and Pat Boone sold more of Tutti Frutti than I did?
And like, this is kind of a running thread for all kinds of black music, which is to say damn near all music, period. And it's conveyed very well in something you wrote for the piece, which says the conventional wisdom was that black music would do just fine so long as there wasn't a black person singing it. In your New Yorker piece, you mentioned the writer and sociologist Zandria Robinson substituting the term appropriation with obliteration. I was wondering, what does the obliteration of black performers making black music mean to you?
The performer exists, and the influence that the performer had still exists, but there is a vanishing of the performer's actual physical presence in lieu of it being replaced by white performers. Like, we see that with Little Richard in this tactile sense. When you talk about, like, you know, Pat Boone singing Little Richard songs, things like that. But it is also, in a more prolonged sense, Little Richard living a life where he had to spend an unreal amount of it reminding people that he was who he was. And that I think, is the greater tragedy of that obliteration, is that it upends a life that should have been spent doing anything else, and it places this massive burden on a performer to continually remind people that they have achieved what they've achieved. That I think there's a devastation to that.
Okay, so I feel as though you were being very diplomatic of the Pat Boone versions of Little Richard songs in your New Yorker article, and I want to give you a forum to be absolutely frank about them here.
No one sings Little Richard songs like Little Richard, so that's one. I mean, it's Pat Boone is, to me, the most egregious offender because he simply didn't have the rhythm for it. And so, like, there's elements of the Pat Boone that's like, well, you're just not on the beat. You're not on the beat that was created for this song. Or your inability to keep up with the song has relied on you slowing it down to a point that it's no longer danceable. It's no longer enjoyable. It's just like the lack of ability that you have to be equipped to sing this is actually immensely detrimental to the source material itself. because you are now stripping the song of its the pleasure that ran through. I mean, like Tutti Frutti and Long Tall Sally, these are pleasureful songs. And in the hands of folks like Pat Boone, who by virtue of not being able to handle the rhythm, just dismantled the rhythm to serve their own purposes, these songs are no longer pleasureful sonically. They're no longer enjoyable.
Little Richard has an incredible string of hits.
And so what they did was they said, we're going to put the white bucks on him.
Got a gal, her name's Sue. Knows just what to do.
Shut up!
One of the things that spoke to me the most in your piece is when you wrote that you're not interested in the performance of humility when it comes to Black artists. Do you think it's damaging for Black artists to not fully own our greatness?
A big issue is when people ask for humility, particularly out of Black artists. I remember maybe a couple of years ago, there was this whole thing about someone online, or this movement of white folks, of course, online, who were complaining about Beyonce not being humble. And my response to that was like, well, to be humble for, you want Beyonce to be humble for you? Or for what purpose would Beyonce's humility serve for you?
Right.
As a witness to her. And this has, Little Richard is as loud and joyfully brash and bold as they come. And that did not stop his achievements from being whitewashed and then washed away. And so, obviously, his boldness, and it's, to be clear, I don't want to call what Little Richard was doing arrogance. It was, you know, his boldness did not serve a purpose for the machinery that would rather him be erased. And so, like, what will humility do?
Do you feel that Little Richard got the recognition, if not exactly the compensation he deserved by the time he reached the end of his life?
No. I mean, there's not enough recognition, I think, to make up for what he was, you know, what was taken from him. There's a level of reparations required in terms of recognition. It's hard to chart those because we're not talking financial reparations. We're talking about historical reparations and altering. I mean, of course, to be clear, Little Richard also deserves finances to match his contributions that he never really got to the level he deserved. But we're talking about rewiring history that has already been told and history that's already been inscribed into the cultural consciousness. And it's harder to repair that. So I think maybe going forward, what I loved about this documentary was that I thought it was such a rich rendering and rich portrait of Little Richard that begins to correct that record. I felt really joyful seeing a lot of responses to this of people coming out of this documentary. You're seeing people tweeting about it or talking about it, saying like, I didn't know that, or I didn't have a full appreciation for that. You know, this documentary is a triumph because it, you know, it's a real achievement because it pushed people to reconsider what they thought they knew about someone who has hovered over culture for a long time, but has not been given their proper due for how they've impacted culture.
That was Hanif Abdurraqib speaking with KEXP's Martin Douglas about the new documentary called Little Richard, I Am Everything. Hanif wrote an essay about the film in The New Yorker. That essay is called What Little Richard Deserved.
Well, long tall Sally, she built a piece of guy, everything that Uncle John need, oh baby.
That was Sun and Vision. You can hear the full 90-minute broadcast of the show every Saturday morning from 7:30 to 9 a.m. Pacific at 90.3 FM in Seattle and on kexp.org. You can help support the show with a one-time $20 donation at kexp.org/sound, or you can help spread the word about the show for free by sharing an episode with a friend, rating, reviewing it, and subscribing to Sound and Vision in your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.